This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show, fulfilling on my promise that I made last week but didn't actually keep. We are officially live on YouTube right now. And as we've discovered, it's probably about, from like the actual time I say these words and I'm looking at the YouTube live stream, it's probably about 30-second delay.
Yeah,
20-30 seconds.
It's broken my heart a little bit. I always thought when I watch sport, I'm like, no, this is exactly as it happens.
Man, I wonder how, well, because when they're out in space and they shoot a message, what is it, like 5 minutes? Mm. I think something like that. So we're doing pretty good. 20 seconds, not bad. But yeah, we are now putting the after show on YouTube. So we have basically as much video content as we can manage, as our team can support right now. We're going to try to get that on YouTube because we know there's a huge audience on YouTube. We've had a lot of requests for people to put the podcast on YouTube. So yes, the after show now is on YouTube. It hasn't really been, man, when we used to put the after show on YouTube back when we had the Marrickfield gym.
We used to do it every week.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
To sit up in the top office in basically a dungeon with a table.
Very hot dungeon.
Yeah, shirts off. And we would riff. We
just pump out after shows.
This is just as raw as it got.
They're all still on there. If anyone goes to the channel, they're all still sitting on there.
There's some pretty good ones. But yeah, very, very glad to be out of there, to be honest. And in this kind of temp studio, we're looking to potentially move to another studio if it makes sense. But right now, this is... that's why the background is kind of a mix of different things. I mean, it's got some of your mum's paintings in the background. Pretty
nice. Classy.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So anyway, plenty to get through today. Now, where I wanted to start was I had an opportunity on the weekend, which I wasn't going to miss, which was to get a... So it's interesting how different people have adapted during the lockdown. So this very famous, for those of you international listeners, there is a very famous... businessman. His name is Justin Hems. He's basically the hospitality giant. I don't know what version of that is in New York or LA or whatever, but he's like the king of hospitality. So he's got like all the best restaurants. He's like owns heaps of buildings, like billionaire. Anyway, so he has these famous this group of famous restaurants, and he has like a head chef at his most famous restaurant. He is the only staff member that was like on salary that didn't lose their salary when COVID hit. So all his other head chefs from all his other restaurants, which arguably are just as good as their head chef, you know how the politics of that stuff works, right? Whoever got in first and whatever, lost their jobs. So they had to, now a lot of them have work back now as things have reopened, but they had to adapt and find new ways to obviously support themselves and their families during COVID. One of the ways that this chef did, his name's Big Sam Young. He's a head chef at Lotus. He is now doing at-home private chef visitations. So you book him in for a night. It's minimum 10 people. It's quite expensive. And he just cooks his most famous dishes for you at your home. So I did that with a friend. And it went swimmingly. And everyone was pumped for it, right? So a few of the guys that got invited there, they're like really big foodies. And so they... That I guess it would be like the equivalent to, I don't know, maybe like, I'm trying to think of some local, oh, maybe not like quite international, but some local, semi-local famous person from our industry rocked up.
Yeah.
Some famous CrossFit athlete or something rocks up. So this particular foodie that was there, he's absolutely starstruck when he comes in. Couldn't speak to him. And then when he finally got enough liquid courage into him to speak to him, they talked about the best part was when you go to a nice restaurant, you know it's good food, but you don't really know all the details behind it. So he was there and he was talking his ear off about to the chef. And as a consequence, we all got to listen in and hear the explanation of every single food. So he explained his process for making lobster. He's like, okay, so you put the lobsters in ice and that makes them go to sleep. And then when you kill them, there's no stress running through their body, so it doesn't toughen the meat. So you learn all this stuff about...
Ice puts a lobster to sleep. Doesn't freeze them?
Well, I think it just puts them to sleep. Right. I don't think it freezes them, yeah. And then... Well, I guess unless you put them in a freezer and actually
just
frozen.
Just put them on ice. Then
like really cold ice. Like you wouldn't... If someone put you on a bunch of ice cubes... for a couple of hours. You wouldn't die.
No, I wouldn't probably fall asleep either.
Yeah. You might. Your blood slow down and you freeze. But anyway, so you just like learn more about the food. But what it does is it pumps you up to eat the food, right? It pumps you up because you're hearing about how much better the food is than regular food. And everything was going well. And then we went through all the dishes. But usually what happens at a fancy restaurant is if you eat really rich food, they only give it to you in certain portion sizes. But because he gave us all the food that he bought, we went way too hard.
Yes.
This is, put 10,000 calorie challenge aside. I'm not joking. This is more full than I've ever been in my life. So full that I'm lying there on the couch. And this is like only 9 o'clock. Mm. Everyone was still looking, we're still going to go out and we're still going to do these other things and we're going to keep drinking. And everyone's on the couch. Like the whole night had turned sideways.
Like sick.
So this one woman goes, I think I'm going to throw up. And I'm like, you know what? I actually think that's a good idea. I'm like, can you go throw up and tell me if you feel better?
I thought you were going to say the sound of her throwing up was going to make her throw up.
No. Just, and she goes and she comes back and it was like, she was like a new person. She was like, I feel fantastic. And I was like, you know what? This might have been the most expensive dinner I've ever purchased, but yes, I'm going to go throw it up. So I went outside.
Tested twice.
Went outside, went around the corner, threw the whole thing up. Had to do it. It was so full.
That's
it was,
how eating disorders
honestly, start. I was more full. At least in the 10,000 calorie challenge, I feel like I'm making progress on my digestion. Yes, I'm full. Yes, I feel sick. But it feels like, okay, if I just like walk around and just wait this out, it's going to digest. Because it's not really rich food necessarily. This food was so fatty and so rich. It didn't feel like it was making any progress.
Also, we paced ourselves because we knew we were in for a big session.
Yeah.
You know, like we never redlined on every meal.
Right. So, I went like red line and beyond.
Yeah.
I went to black line and it was so bad that I ended up throwing up. So, that was my my weekend story. But I slept really well. But I think I lost all the macros out of it.
I don't know if you've seen that famous comedian. He's like, most people stop eating when they're full. Like, I stop eating when I hate myself.
Yeah. I hated myself, but it came up. I honestly threw it up. It came up. It was so thick. It came up like a paste. It was basically a solid. It barely digested. And the amount that came up, it scared me. It just made me think, how big is my stomach? Because there's so much mass here. Like, stomachs really do stretch to fit in a lot of food.
Yeah, well, the average person eats... it's around 4 pounds of food a day.
Around
Precision Nutrition used to talk about it. So, like, just around 2 kilos of food. I'm sure, like, we eat more than that probably. So, we're up nearly 3 kilos of food a day.
Yeah.
A lot of mass.
Yes, it's a lot. No, I was talking about with a doctor yesterday, that just a friend of mine, and I was meeting up with him. And we were talking about, because when he played footy, he was like 98 kilos or whatever. And the reason he came back down to like 90 is he goes, mate, it was just like the amount of food I needed just to maintain my hunger levels because I had so much muscle mass from footy. He goes, yeah, I was happy to keep the muscle mass. It wasn't going to be that much harder. He goes, but it just became inconvenient with my lifestyle to constantly have to eat so much food. And I think it's almost a detriment sometimes because if you're trying to go out with friends on the weekend and stuff, this used to happen with our old business partner. He didn't like to go out to certain restaurants because he knew they wouldn't feed him enough.
Mm.
He wouldn't like hit his macros necessarily, which is makes you a social retard.
Yeah.
Like it's bad. Like you should just be able to go to a restaurant and just eat a normal amount of food and be full. And if you want to eat more food later, you can just like go eat more food later on your own. But if you get to the point where you're trying to eat,
it's always so sad about that though. Just go like hide behind the gutter and just cram more calories.
Go into your room and just eat those.
You know that when you train, you do develop habits that you forget are like unusual. So like one of mine is that if I'm going out to a restaurant, I always eat before I go.
Yeah.
Always I have some food before leaving. Right?
Yeah.
So you don't turn up starving because that often ruins the meal, right?
You turn up,
you're so hungry and you're like, oh, it's not enough. And you're like looking, can I order more food?
Yeah.
So like, I think I didn't really realize that was really weird until I met other people. And they're like, what are you doing? Oh, I was eating. Why? Oh, we're about to go out for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, no, dude, you got to eat.
Wait, still do it?
Of course.
Yeah, but it would be less now than you normally would.
Yeah, right? It's less. But
you just have a little snack.
Yeah,
a piece of fruit.
Extra protein before I go. Yeah. And then you go and you're not like starving to death and you just eat a normal meal and enjoy it.
Yeah. I'd say I only do that depending on where I'm going out to, where I know. But I definitely think I've relaxed on it a lot more. Luke Tulloch. Remember Luke? We had him on the podcast. The PTs now lives in Sweden, I think, or Switzerland. He moved to Europe. But anyway, he always puts up really good posts on Instagram. He's one of the best people I follow on Instagram. And he put up this thing yesterday. It was like things I've changed my mind on. And one of them was protein amount for muscle mass, maximum muscle mass. And he was like, I experimented with the low end of all the research, which is 0.6 grams per pound of body weight.
0.6 per pound?
Yeah. 0.6. So if I'm 200 pounds, then that's 0.6 of that is 120 grams of protein.
Okay, reasonable.
So it's like 3 meals at 40 grams of protein.
Yep.
And
but definitely like probably half as much as most people in the gym eat.
Most people, barely make 100. And anyway, so he said, I think experimented with that and he said like, able to put on plenty of muscle. And it's really interesting because most of the research, I was pretty stuck on 1 gram per pound. And recently, there's no way I've been hitting 200 grams. I'm just not putting enough attention to it. But I'm definitely hitting it like at least 130, 140.
Yeah.
Like I would say there's 2 meals which are over 50 grams and then there's like a shake and a lighter meal in there. So I'm definitely hitting 150 grams easily. And I've maintained my weight. If anything, my weight's gone up a little bit.
Well, it seems like to me that from what I've heard, it's a lot more, and you said there's more with clients, there's more wiggle room with how much protein you can have if you're eating more calories than you need, or as many calories as you need. You have to be probably pushing up the higher end when you're in a deficit.
Yeah.
Or you're going to lean more towards it because you're like more worried about losing muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just interesting because like we've just been so, I just know the conditioning I've had from such a young age was to just eat so much protein. And now it's like when you first do CrossFit and you want to step back from the intensity, but you're worried that when you step back from the volume and the intensity that you'll lose muscle mass, you'll lose fitness, you'll lose body composition. You think everyone will start to go backwards and it just takes a little bit of faith and just time and patience to realize that's not really the case. And you can still make progress in so many other areas and still stay fit and not have to train like a maniac all the time. And that's like a realization I have with training. And then I think I'm starting to have those realizations with nutrition is that your nutrition doesn't have to be like 200 grams of protein every single day to like maintain your muscle mass. No, it's actually going to be quite low. It can be down to like 120, 130. And so those are just like some of the realizations I think that, you know, as you learn them, it just makes you better off because then you're not, it's just not as difficult because there's so, food is such a massive part of everyone's life, right? So much a massive part of culture, especially if you live in a culture where it's like pretty normal to go out and eat food 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
It's hard, I think, when you are really strict on your nutrition. I guess it's some people go to certain areas of the world and do crazy diets and it's easier because culturally, there's not as much pressure to eat out or eat certain foods. But in where we live in Sydney, really in any major city, food culture is strong. Hospitality thrives in major cities. It's hard to be on like some crazy strict diet.
Yeah. Yeah. Equally though, on the other side is that accessing healthy food has dramatically become easier as well.
Yeah.
You know, like we used to always talk about you go
when
like,
you eat out.
Yeah. Like totally. Generally living now, like, we used to talk about you could go to the service station. I don't know if you remember this. The only thing you could get at a service station that was like reasonably okay was a can of tuna. Like 10 years ago, they had nothing healthy, right? It was just like soft drinks and like chocolate bars and like chips, like nothing, right? It's meant to be a place you get sustenance while you're driving.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like that has changed. You can get pretty much, like I have some clients that just eat out at service stations all day.
You get the preheated meals. You can get
pre-cooked proper meals.
Yeah.
And you can heat them up. They got like good protein shakes there, sweet, like good protein bars, fresh fruit. Like you could eat there all day.
And there's actually, you know what though? There's actually only one protein. Because I was a big fan of the protein shake at the servo station. Now there's maybe like 10 brands, right? Yeah. So I've experimented with all the brands. The only brand that doesn't want to make me run to the toilet right now, I can't even remember. It's like some dairy farmer thing, but it's milk protein, cold pressed milk protein. So all the other protein drinks, it's like filtered milk protein. Yeah. So they just take milk and they just obviously put it through some process and it just is protein. Whereas the other companies will put some kind of protein powder in like a pea isolate or a soy isolate and they'll mix it in water and put some other stuff in it.
The cheapest version possible.
Yeah. And that just wrecks my guts now. Whereas just the one that's just straight milk, heaps better for me. Overall, honestly, I can't drink him that much anymore. You know, it's funny because I thought I could drink him. And then one day I picked it off the shelf and a mate of mine from England, he goes, oh, you can drink those. go, what do you mean? Of course I can drink them. He goes, oh, I can't drink them. They just wreck my guts. And I reckon I wasn't paying attention to it until he mentioned it. I would just drink it and my guts would get wrecked, but I would just ignore it. Mm. You know, and that happens all the time, right? People just don't really pay attention to it. They just think, oh, it's normal, yes, or whatever. And then when I started paying attention to it, I think I started to realize, no, you should be able to drink this and then not have your guts just increasing in the amount of air and bloating. So, I don't think they're that great, to be honest. But they're better than what they used to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so much of that prepackaged stuff, it's the stuff they add into it. And they had I know you haven't heard of it, they had a long dive into this. Previous guest of the show, Paul Saladino, went on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Mm.
Need
to get to that.
Yeah, he was the carnivore guy that came on our show. I know that he had people criticize him and obviously messaged us criticizing him, which I don't know why you do that. You could just message him directly if you'd like to. I definitely did not pass them on.
Can you pass this on for me?
But anyway, on the show, and this is quite similar to exactly what you're talking about, he was just going through, and I don't know if he's changed his mind a little bit, but where he was saying, and I think it was very convincing, like so much of the research now into the negative effects, is from plants, but it's from more like the processed plant stuff, like vegetable oils, soy protein, stuff like that. And that's where like the real damage on his end that he sees coming through.
Mm.
And if I reflect on, the foods that generally make me feel upset, it is usually those types of added foods.
Right.
It is from plants, not like really healthy plants. It's like those sort of like plant oils, plant vegetables, stuff like that. And there is tons of research coming out now. Using like intervention trials with those types of foods, adding them into people's diets, this seems to be like pretty destructive.
Mm.
And they're so cheap. So I think I just fucking pump them into everything, right?
Yeah. Do you think now that Paul has a book called The Carnivore Code, I think that's what it's called. Do you think it's made it harder for him to get his message across now that he's benefiting from it financially? I feel, because think about it, what's the first thing you go after? The first thing you think of when a vegan goes on and promotes a vegan diet or a keto guy or whatever is they have books, they have supplements, right?
Yeah.
So you think, well, of course they're going to speak positively about it because now they're incentivized to. But we knew Paul pre-book, right?
Yeah.
Before he was actually making money off of it. But then that could also be the case for lots of vegan people as well.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, these days, if you just have a huge message, you end up writing a book.
Mm.
It's just like it's the next evolution. Like he's trying to change lives, and they're like, "Hey, man, you know, authors come out. You got to make a book."
I get that. I get that. Make
a book out of it.
No, I get that. But I'm just saying, like, we have a double standard here. It's like you're gonna lean, but then I'll easily point out, "Well, that vegan guy's got a book, so he's benefiting."
Yeah, I don't usually think the vegans that are really into it is so much to try and make money off the book they've brought out.
It's like save the planet.
Yeah, often exactly. Yeah, it's more just like, hey, I truly think they always thought it was a really good idea,
and
they were always onto it. And then the book comes later. I don't know how much money they make out of books. I'm sure some do really well. Some probably just make good money doing other stuff as well. The only ones I do think is like that was the people that say own like a vegan burger company.
Yes.
That is what you really are vegan making. Yeah, because you're making money of how much they eat off it.
Yeah.
And that is different. And I think that's the same as when, you know, someone's got a creatine, they're talking about creatine. They may honestly think creatine is good, but there's some conflict there.
It's better than it needs to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I read this interesting thing while we're on protein. So, Greg Knuckles puts out his weekly email roundup of some of the scientific researchers. Pretty short email. It's really good. But anyway, one of the things was interesting because I get asked about this sometimes is casein protein. If anyone knows the marketing around casein protein.
It's a sleep protein.
Yeah, it's this slower, less processed protein, which is another component of the whey filtering extract process. It's like another byproduct of cheese.
Yes.
That basically digests slower. Now, the marketing says you take this one at night. You take whey during the day because it's fast absorbing. You take casein late at night because it's slow releasing.
Because you're not eating all night.
Exactly. So, you have a constant trickle of amino acids into your blood. Man, can you imagine the original marketers sitting around saying that and just going, that's genius. We're going to sell so much casein. Like, it is genius.
Which they did sell
it is
a genius. Lot of casein.
But there was a research paper recently to go on top of the already existing research, which debunks a lot of the casein stuff. But it says, this is just the bottom line. It says, in summary, 30 grams of casein did not increase overnight intramuscular connective tissue protein synthesis following resistance exercise, but a high-protein diet is still advisable to maximally support muscular adaptations to training. In other words, casein made no difference to increasing protein synthesis and building new muscle. you can just make it whey, you can make it something else, you can make it steak, you can make it anything. So casein is a waste of money.
Well, there's always another gap, and often people don't bother to go, which is like it digests more slowly. That's probably true, right? It probably does digest more slowly. But then there's another jump, is like, does it make me stronger? Like in the gym.
Right.
Just because it digests slow does not mean it's going to make that jump.
No, no.
Like on the surface, yes, sounds good, but there's a huge jump there for what you're actually after.
Huge. But remember as well, like casein is also one of those offcuts that it's like really, really like low quality protein. Really low quality protein. Like it disagrees with majority of people that take it. I don't know. And it blends really poorly. Like it's not a very high quality source of protein. And if you're trying to put high quality source of protein in your body, casein is not so top
probably,
of that list.
You're probably worse off.
Yeah. Like I don't think it's a good choice at all. Like I just don't think it's great. Like if you're putting inflammatory proteins into your body before you go to sleep, that's going to be disruptive to your sleep. Mm. Not only that, but also you want to give yourself a good hour and a half, 2 hour window before you really put any food in.
Yeah.
You know, the research is showing us that when you are ingesting food, your body is suppressing the sleep hormones that, because, you know, when you eat food, your body thinks it's awake. Mm. Your body thinks it's daytime internally. So you want to reduce as much food consumption as close to bedtime as possible, which is a little counterintuitive to, because there's so many layers of how people think about food timing, right? And the most common one that people put out there, guys like James Smith, is like, it doesn't, food timing, you can eat right at night, you can eat early in the morning, it doesn't matter for your body composition. And he's right. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter that much. But then there's nuances to it. But it does affect your sleep if you eat close to bedtime, right? It's not good to eat close to bedtime for those reasons. So yes, it might not affect your body composition.
But it affects your training, affects your energy during the day. It affects
exactly.
Sleep.
So if it's affecting your sleep, then is that then affecting your training and your nutrition choice the next day? Probably. And look, I can smash a whole bowl of cereal and then go straight to bed.
Not everyone's like that though.
Exactly. Mm. Doesn't always mean it's the best thing just because I can do it. Yeah. And maybe I'll, like many things in the future, there will be periods of time where that doesn't work for me, you know, or certain foods don't work for me. But yeah, at this point, I do definitely give myself a good hour before I'm like going to bed with any food.
And staying on the protein bandwagon, this is one more. This is rounding from last week. We talked about creatine.
Mm.
Also came up on the show and they had a study. And this is, I think, is good perspective on it. So this is a study where they had intervention trial giving people extra creatine. Some people didn't know. They weren't actually getting any extra creatine. And this was particularly strong in vegetarians and vegans that were in the study, not as much in the meat eaters. They assumed likely because the meat eaters just had more creatine in their bodies than the other ones. These people weren't supplementing beforehand. The people that took creatine, it was 2 weeks later, performed better on cognitive tasks. So nothing to do with physical tasks. It was all like, it was like a kind of like mental abilities test they had them do, and like speech ability test. And it improved in them.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so creatine has, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago on the show, there's like this new group of like local business owners that I'm working with, and they bring to me a lot of the common questions, the common man questions, the myths that are still out there. And one of the things they've been asking me about is creatine. And they want to know if they should take it or not. And I say, absolutely. Creatine is a great supplement for anyone to take on a regular basis. I pretty much have it 5 to 6 days a week without fail, 5 grams a day in my smoothie. I just think, for all the cognitive benefits, Alison Breaker even reckons that there's a pathway there that they haven't researched on how it benefits sleep. And then obviously it just increases, you know, muscle strength and size. But here's the myth. The myth thinks everyone, creatine makes you fat. And it is such a deeply ingrained, hard myth to break. It's crazy.
How would it make you fat?
Exactly. It doesn't make you fat, right? But people think because it bloats you, it makes you fat. So I was trying to explain to people the process when creatine goes into the body and where it moves to and how it goes into the muscle and it increases extra, holds extra fluid in the muscles, more water. But it's a good thing. More volume of water in your muscles is going to make your muscle look bigger and fuller, like you've got a pump. And if anything, it's going to make you look better because you're going to look bigger and not necessarily leaner, but your muscles will look more shapely and stuff. So I'm like, creatine is a great supplement to have. And it's so funny because they're like, I sat there, we processed it intellectually, we had a long discussion about it, and then they started taking it, and he goes, nah, dude, I look fatter for sure. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, no, it's not true. It's just not true, but it's We're so emotional as humans. Like, we can make such we're just not very rational and logical so many times that we just take something, we have this ingrained belief, which is not grounded in any facts, and we just see what isn't there. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating. It's kind of disappointing in a way, but it's just how it goes. That's just, people have certain beliefs about certain things. And I mean, maybe they probably haven't even taken, honestly, enough. It was probably like 2 days in.
Yeah.
The creatine probably didn't even reach that system yet.
Well, I think in creatine is still, which it still is, but I think it's still banned in college sports in America.
Yeah, it is. Yeah it is. The NCAA. Yeah.
What is the justification for that?
Because the performance improvement is too great. That's what it is. Because there are like, I mean, it's like a, I think some studies, it was like a 6% increase in like strength and power output. And they reckon that's too much. They reckon that classifies as like a steroid.
But I mean, you can get it from food as well. So it seems like such a weird thing to...
Yeah, I think you have to eat a lot of food though. I think you have to eat a lot of steak to get to those levels.
But still, I mean, you would never ban protein.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, it's strange. Yeah.
And they can have caffeine, which like obviously works as well.
Yes. Maybe they have. I know, I'm pretty sure the last time I checked, and this is a while ago, the UFC had limits on caffeine. So it was if you have like two
cups. They couldn't even have coffee before an event.
If you have one really strong cup, you'll be over. Yeah. So, man, as if you need caffeine though, at a UFC fight. The adrenaline of fighting someone to the death in a cage.
You never see someone in there like, bro, I just could barely wake up.
Yeah. So tired, bro. So tired. 50,000 screaming fans. I just couldn't get going. Yeah, so it's very strange. But not stranger than more fads that seem to keep popping up, especially in Sydney. It's like we are the epicenter of fad exercise programs. But the newest one, I don't think it's that new, but it's come across our path recently, is basically EMS, electromuscular stimulation training, where they hook people up to electrodes and they train. Now, EMS stuff has been used in the past and like TENS units for rehab and muscle activation. The most popular one being Compex. We did some work with them a while back. We went out to their, their headquarters in Australia?
Like the factory.
Yeah, and they showed us all the different tools and they stuck it on us.
They fucking floored me. I don't know if you remember it, but they like put me on, they put it on my quads.
And you had to do squats or something?
I had to do squats, but they cranked it. They actually didn't crank it all the way, but the guy was like, oh, look, it's not really safe. Like, but I have done it to people.
Right.
He gave me like 9 out of 10. And I hit the deck.
Yeah, it's hard.
Completely locked up, and I was so sore the next day.
Well, man, I remember that story we had. We had one of those units, but it was like a really shit one at the gym.
Oh, yeah.
And the pads, because everyone was using it at the gym, the pads weren't that sticky. And one day I put it on my quad. I put the pads on there. And say it's normally like a 10, and it's like a really good level of contraction. But we're using it for recovery, right? I couldn't feel it. My muscles were barely working at 10. I'm like, this is fucking crazy. So I kept cranking it up 20, 30, 40. I'm like, nah, it's like barely working. And what had happened was the pads hadn't made proper connection with my leg, but I had it at like 40, right? And so I press the pads down on my leg and it goes to 40. My knee goes into full lockout and I ripped the pads off and my quads were stuck in locked, like fully stuck. I couldn't bend my knee.
It is a nuts feeling.
Yeah. It's like they turned on every fucking motor unit in my quads and it was contracting so hard. I reckon it took a good 30 seconds for my muscles to unlock. That's not safe. that's not safe. Anyway, so this gym has decided that we're going to strap people into these full body EMS suits and give them a workout that they can normally do in 60 minutes, which causes 20. Now, I am not 100% familiar, so I'm going to step out of my lane a little bit here on the EMS and use some just intuition and theory. But what I am most disappointed with is when they made the comparison to real strength training. Now, you can go and talk about your bullshit fake science like most gyms do as much as you want. That's fine. But don't pull our legitimate strength training into this equation. You just talk about your thing. Don't bring anyone else down in this thing. And so... do you have the graph read this shit off for the amusement? So
this is what they put on their website. This is, I don't care, they're called Impulse. This is the gym. But they're everywhere. I think they're in the States as well. So you need 20 minutes hooked on their thing. Regular strength training, you need 60 minutes. They activate 90% of your muscles. Regular strength training activates 30%.
Only someone who's never been under a heavy back squat thinks that you have 30% activation in your muscles.
The guy in the video is not big. He has activated very few of his muscles. And they say increased metabolic rate after training is up to 85 hours for them, which is like 4 days. And with regular strength training, it's 48 hours. And they don't keep going with this shit. They say they want it safe on the joints. Regular strength training is unsafe on your joints.
Oh my God. Look, if anything is unsafe in your joints, driving is unsafe on your joints. Like, you just can't say that. It's not a fair comparison. You can't. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. You can't throw strength training under the bus for this. It just doesn't make any sense, because I guarantee you, without a shadow of a doubt, the people in our gym will destroy the people in your gym in like the most basic tasks.
Well, what market do you want? Like, if you want big muscles, the people in there don't have big muscles.
Yeah.
Are they strong? Like, obviously not. The only way to get strong is to lift heavy weights.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get strong by just hooking electrodes onto your muscles every single day and not lifting any weights. The only one I've ever used it for, I thought it was good, was like potentially activating really weak muscles.
Mm.
But as soon as you do that, you go and do strength training. Like, as soon as you get them working well, like, okay, cool, now let's go try like an actual strength exercise to build some strength. I don't think, could be wrong here, but I don't think anybody's ever got strong just doing this.
No, but like, how can you be so dumb as a consumer to think that regular strength training doesn't work?
Yeah.
Like, so many people do it. So many people get benefits from it. So few people do this EMS stuff. So few people, if any, have gotten results from it. It's like, no, I'm just going to do the one that actually works. It's like, no, you're going against the grain here to try something which 1,000% does not work. You know what I mean? And if it does, it's like very minimal benefits. How can it be better than getting under a heavy bar or picking up a heavy load or doing pull-ups? Like, no. It's not better.
There's no way.
It's not better. Those people could train there with those stupid packs on and charging up their muscles, and I guarantee you they still couldn't do a pull-up.
Mm.
It's because it's just not training the brain and the coordination and the nervous system properly. It's just not.
Yeah, and I mean, your body gets good at the specific task you ask of it.
Yeah.
So when you ask it to do pull-ups, you know, you get better at pull-ups. When you just ask it to sit there and put electrodes on you, you don't get better at pull-ups.
No, absolutely not.
You probably get better at sitting there with electrodes on your body.
It's upsetting. But
obviously, it's a very expensive place to go train.
Yeah. How much is it? Does it say? Is it got pricing on the website?
It's like basically priced exactly the same as regular training. So it's like about nearly $100 a week for these classes.
Okay.
But you're only in there for 20 minutes.
Right. But surely the setup takes like 5-10 minutes. So is that including setup?
Yeah. Like putting I think it's a 20-minute slot.
Wow. Wow.
$65 for a 20-minute class.
Yeah, I just don't know what's wrong with you. There's many things, but for you particularly, whoever invented that, you're either a scam artist or you just don't know how to read science, because you're just full of it. Okay, anyway, moving on. Should we? We'll get into listener questions before we dive into listener questions. Actually, one of our sponsors released a new product this week. I'm very excited about Manscaped. You guys know, love this company. They sponsored the UFC, sponsored My Last Project. They released the Weed Whacker in Australia, which is...
Oh, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, dude, the nasal hair trimmer, which I'm actually pumped
that's
about.
That's good.
Yeah, actually pumped about.
That's
yeah.
good, because I use the Manscaped product for that, but I just use the pliers they sent.
Oh, you rip your hairs out.
Yeah, which is a painful, slow way to go.
Oh, no, I just thought of that hurts. No, yeah, I think it's a... Nose hairs that stick out are like the, it's like the monobrow.
It's the shit that like when you're 75, you give up. Yeah. So only old people have it. You're like, fuck it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you don't really have a solution to the problem. You kind of just like, I'll just push them back up there. Or like, yeah, like Raph, I'll just rip them out. It's not a very pleasant solution. It's kind of like the monobrow as well. People kind of look at it going, you should really do something about that. And it's throwing me off here. Like, I don't know what it is, but this nose hairs, this monobrow, I don't really trust you. Like, you don't really look after those areas. So, if you're just fortunate enough to born without having to manage your nasal hairs, great for you. But if you're like me, you need a solution to cut them. So, Weed Whacker is out there. You guys can get on this.
So, how does it work? It shaves it?
Man, it's basically like same thing. It's like the skin safe technology.
Yeah.
It's like a little, looks like a little drill bit, basically. Yeah. And you just kind of shove it up there and turn it, spin it around, and it just sorts you out. So, I'm sure you have nose hairs for a reason, so you don't want to cut them all out, but just the ones that are sticking out. Yeah, just make yourself nice and neat. And the same thing can be done on your genitals, bro. Like, you got the Manscaper, you got the lawnmower. So, man, I got tons of sick products in there. But the one I actually use every day is their body wash.
Oh, yeah, the cream. That's good.
The body wash is amazing. So, I'm using that pretty much every day. No, I actually am using that every day. It doubles as a shower, as like a shampoo as well. It's like sulfate free and yeah, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, and any, remember guys, well, all their, a lot of their profits and revenue goes towards testicular cancer research as well. That's why we love them. So anyway, if you are looking to get Manscaped, I think the research says it's like 89% of women prefer guys that are Manscaped and think it's unhygienic if you're not. Definitely get on it. So it's Manscaped, MANSCAPED.com, Manscaped. And if you use our codes, it's a slightly different code now. It's MMP20. Our other code got hacked. So MMP20, MMP20, those five characters, and you will get 20% off any of your orders. And as we come into Christmas, guys, it is a great opportunity for a birthday present. It's just for any guy in your life that needs it. It is an absolutely great gift. So again, manscaped.com, MMP20 when you check out.
Okay, first listener question, Lisa Boyle. It's about HRV. I don't have an Apple Watch, but Lisa Boyle has an Apple Watch, and she says it's huge. Like, what is a good HRV score and a bad HRV score?
Yeah, actually, it's a good question.
Yeah, because this comes up constantly. We have so many clients on the Whoop, like, hey, you know, you smashed me in HRV, or like, I just started and my HRV is already better than yours. How does that work?
Yeah, so HRV, which is basically a measure, most people's number, their regular HRV number, is going to fall between a range of 40 and 100. Seems like, or 40 and 80. And the higher your HRV score, the better. Yes. So like on the weekend, had a big weekend, got down to like 17, bad. Whereas like a good day, I'm up around like kind of 60, 70, pretty normal. But it's very different for different people. Now, HRV only, the only thing you should be concerned about in your HRV is just your range. So just where you sit regularly, when you're green, when you're well recovered, versus when you're poorly recovered, and what that goes down to. And then when you're in incredible form, what that goes up to. And that's really a range that you should be concerned about. Obviously, most of the time you want to sit in the upper end of that range. But there's moments obviously where you go down to the bottom of the range. But that range can be very different person to person. Like, I know the top end of my range doesn't even reach the bottom end of some other people's range.
Some people are always in three figures.
Yeah.
I've never seen three figures.
Yeah, there's someone on our leaderboards and he sits at like 120,
yeah,
130 pretty regularly. And there's no indication as to like why his is higher or lower. It's just individualized.
And it's very different to the other recovery method on Whoop, which is like resting heart rate.
Yes.
Resting heart rate is much more
comparable.
There's
universal.
Still definitely genetic differences between people, and just because someone else's resting heart rate is lower than it doesn't mean they're fitter.
No.
Always.
No.
There's a huge genetic component. But overall, like, yes, if you took everyone with a resting heart rate higher than 60 and everyone with a resting heart rate lower than 45, like the lower than 45, who's going to be fitter?
Yeah. Whereas HRV is not one of those metrics. It doesn't correlate with your fitness. It just correlates with your body's readiness to take on stress. That's what it is. And someone who sits at a higher range than someone else has nothing to do with being a fitter or a stronger person. Because believe me, there are plenty of people that join Whoop that have terrible strength and fitness that have extremely high HRV compared to me. It's not comparable like that.
Okay, Mike Group PT. He's a newly qualified PT with a small but growing client base. He's finding it difficult with the increase in NEAT, so non-exercise activity.
Thermogenesis.
From a busy day of fitness. What's his problem? His problem is how do we cope with the transition from like actually having energy left to train from like all this new activity? I'm guessing he had like maybe a sedentary job before this.
Yeah. Man, yeah, it's a pretty good question, because like I think one industry that's had to kind of deal with this for a long time is construction, right? They're up early.
Yeah, dude, they take like 40,000 steps a day.
Yeah, they're up early, so they can't train before work. And then out in the sun all day, swinging a hammer, drilling stuff, carrying stuff, like they're active all day. They don't get a lot of rest, even though some of them kind of pledge in Australia, but generally they're working all day and they get a short lunch break, then they're back to work. And yeah, they finish a bit earlier around 3 p.m. But the ones, you know, the clients of ours that we've had in construction, yeah, they're pretty exhausted by the end of the day. Like, and you know, I would argue in some ways, they don't probably need to go to the gym unless they, I mean, they're doing enough physical activity and movement throughout the day that they're good. Like, as long as you look after your nutrition, look after your sleep, unless you really want to improve aspects of your strength and body composition,
to
compete.
If you're skinny and you want to get strong, you're still going to have to train.
Yeah, but if you just wanted to like have a good body composition and stay lean and
stay healthy.
You
could definitely train less.
Yeah, you wouldn't need it as much. If anything, you would probably do more like complementary stuff to that. So you might do like some mobility or yoga or some bodyweight stuff, gymnastic stuff, because you're just moving. You wouldn't necessarily go into the gym and do like chest all day and arms necessarily. But anyway, what he's asking is, how do I have the energy left to train if I'm basically doing a ton of NEAT all day? And it's a good question. The first thing that pops to mind is obviously the first thing you need to take care of is sleep. If you are low on sleep, if you're averaging 6-7 hours a night and you are trying to do that amount of activity and then train afterwards, your body simply does not have the raw materials left to give you the energy to train.
Yeah, I think you need more sleep in this circumstance. If you train first thing in the morning and then you like go to a normal day, you can like get yourself up and get through one session. You're like, okay, I got one thing to do. Get up, go to the gym, smash some caffeine. But if it's at the end of the day and you've had not enough sleep, it's a different ballpark.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing would be is you just need more calories.
Yes.
You need to eat. If you're doing like 25, 30, 40,000 steps a day, you need to be eating like 4,000 calories. Like if I'm like 90 kilos, 200 pounds, let's say, and I'm on, if I'm doing a 25,000, 30,000 step day, which is huge for me, right? Huge. Like I barely hit 10.
That's like a week put together.
Definitely, it's like a month in lockdown. I'm eating a lot. I'm eating a lot of food.
Yeah, and
especially if I'm training.
I think people get wrong is the difference is bigger than training. So if you are like very sedentary, but you train, how much extra you have to eat is not as much as if you go do a very active job.
Yes.
It's a much bigger difference.
Yeah. So when, you know, when you fill out those questionnaires.
Like a macro calculator.
Yes. Yeah. And it says, are you sedentary? Are you light activity, moderate, heavy activity, vigorous activity? If you train in the morning, like do CrossFit, say do a CrossFit class, you go and sit at your desk for 10 hours, your activity levels is light to sedentary.
Yeah.
That's what you are technically classified as. So yeah, like Raph said, all the movement that you're doing throughout the day counts more towards your overall activity than training itself. Training is a very small window of time and it's not continuous. So there's rest periods and this and that. So definitely eat more, definitely get more sleep. And if that doesn't make a difference, then look, I would be considering your work schedule, like potentially move. There's a few different strategies. You can move everything to the mornings, have the afternoons free. You could move everything into like 4 days. So you've got 3 days off. Like there's stuff that you can restructure.
I would recommend as well, potentially just going to bed really early, getting up really early.
Yeah.
You know, potentially training at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
It might often be better for you than training at 5 p.m.
Yeah. At least you're getting it in. Yeah.
Okay. Nick Atkinson. And he has pushed hard to get this question answered because we didn't answer it a few times in a row and he keeps bugging us.
Sorry, bro.
So here we are. Is there any benefit to training at altitude? There is a gym opening near me that simulates 3,500 meters above sea level and boasts that you burn 20% more calories and reduces leptin so you'll be less hungry. Is this something your body would adapt to, a gimmick or beneficial?
Yeah, look, I mean, we ruffled a few feathers when we talked about this last time, so we'll just keep this brief. But simulated altitude training, simple, like the science is pretty clear on it, that you need to train low and live high in order to get the benefits from it. So if you're simulating altitude by living low, so let's use Sydney, for example, we live at sea level, but then if you're going into a simulated altitude training center, then you are training high. The science supports the opposite. The science supports living high, so living at simulated altitude training or simulated altitude, and then training low. And the reason for that is because there is an adaptation window that we have researched extensively and have proven in multiple studies that in order for you to get the benefits of low oxygen and for your body to adapt and create more, it's like, what's the erythropoietin, whatever the injection stuff is. So your body's more efficient with less oxygen. It takes time. That is why people sleep in these altitude tents in their house. It's why they live in these altitude bubbles and homes, because it takes hours and hours and hours every single day to get that adaptation. And then they take that adaptation that they've gotten from living at simulated altitude, and then they go and they just do their regular training. So they step out of their tent and they go and they train. They might do some training at altitude as well, just to adapt to it, depending on what their circumstances are after a few weeks. But then they go and they train super hard at sea level, because now they're conditioned to use less oxygen, but they've got abundance of oxygen at sea level. So they they feel like a machine because they've got all this extra energy. If you do the opposite, right? If you're used to living with 100 units of oxygen, let's say 90 units of oxygen, and then they put you in a place where you have 60 units of oxygen, what do you think is going to happen? You're just going to automatically go and compromise. So we had a friend of ours do one of these sessions, and they said, they told you to go slow. They told you to take it easy because, yeah, fair enough. Like, there's less oxygen in the room. Let's not push ourselves crazy hard because it's you're going to be compromised going into this, which is great. It should definitely say that. But they had to step out of the session because, you know, they're pretty fit. They're pretty healthy. And it's just too difficult to go through. Anyway, I talked about this with a doctor yesterday, and he just thinks there's going to be major legal concerns for these companies going forward because people could have these severe blood oxygen depletion episodes. And he's like, look, I would not be surprised if enough people go through these. You'd be having stories of people being rushed outside the oxygen, the simulated altitude chamber, wrapped up in, you know, the foil and put on oxygen because their blood oxygen goes too low. So look, all the stuff they're talking about, all the science they're talking about, they've just mixed it up. It's not in the way they're delivering their service. It's not going to work. So, I just don't see this one quite taking off. But you know, people have money, people want, you know, the next best thing, and that's how fads work. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to do, you can do your own research on this. I'll be open to seeing what research they're looking at to create it. But there is heaps, and they've done reviews of everything because it is really popular, and there's, you know, altitude is not going away in terms of like the Olympics, right? People are going to keep using altitude training. Of course,
yeah, it's great for elite level athletes.
So it's not like there's no research on it and the research might come out later. It's actually a lot of research on it. It's a huge thing. You know, the people put money in and it's pretty well decided on what works for it. One thing I was thinking is, you remember the training mask? You had a training mask, right?
Yes, that one. Yeah.
That is an implement that I wish that fad came in 2020. That would have taken off during COVID.
Oh yeah,
the ultimate ultimate COVID training tool.
Yeah,
there was, when that fad was going around, and I know it has some good uses to the training mask, but it also was a bit of a fad.
Mm.
I still remember going to a conventional gym and just seeing guys walk around the conventional gym with the training mask on.
Right,
that's got to be the most inconvenient fad that's ever gone around.
Yeah, oh, super inconvenient. I just think, well, unfortunately, as humans, we're just always looking for the shortcut. Our brains are built to look for shortcuts, to make things easier for us. They're efficiency machines, our brain. Unfortunately, it's not something that you always want to apply to what you're doing with your training. The biggest differences you'll make in your training is just being consistent and doing proper strength training and getting a good program and getting a great coach and being held accountable. And these are not the sexy things, but it's the battle that we go to every single day, and we obviously help our clients with it. Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, this simulated altitude thing, I just think it's gonna blow over. It's never taken off anywhere. I just don't see it taking off, except at elite level sports. Mm. So,
okay, next question was, have you guys ever tried the Feel Grounds shoes? So these are like a barefoot shoe from Europe. I'm always on the lookout. This was like, I didn't actually see this question, but just completely coincidentally, I did go on and buy a pair of their...
How did you find this company?
I normally buy Vivos, but anyone that knows Vivos, the shoes are decent quality, but they have no like shoes you can wear that aren't really embarrassing. They just have ones that you can wear and just take the embarrassment. But the down...
I'm glad you finally come around to...
The downside of that is that I haven't been wearing them as much. I still wear them every day for training and running. But I think most of the benefit in barefoot shoes is not in training. It's wearing them during the regular. And that's how I got all the benefit from it. So now that I'm not wearing them most of the day, I'm like, well, I'm not getting that much benefit.
Yeah.
I probably would train better in like Metcons or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to go in, see if I can find some new ones. Technology's getting better. Maybe there is like some good quality barefoot shoes out there. This was the best I could find. So they have like some casual looking shoes.
In terms of the visual.
Yeah, it's the visual of it, but still is like a genuine barefoot shoe. When I say barefoot, I mean like you can roll this up into a ball and like hold it in your hand. And it's basically like not much between you and the ground. Some of the shoes here like are horrific, which is pretty standard for these types of companies, but some of them look pretty good. So I ordered the Hi-Rise Net. It's all in euros, but it set me back $213 Australian dollars. And it is on its way from Europe. So I'll be able to give it a proper review.
There's, I was going to bring it up. Yeah, like, so one of the, you probably wouldn't know the brand, there's a brand called Balenciaga. It's like one of the most high-end designer brands in the world. They did a collab with Vibram.
They did?
Yeah. Look at the shoe.
That's the shoe for me. Oh my God.
That's disgusting.
$2,000.
Yes.
So it's a Balenciaga barefoot shoe.
Balenciaga barefoot shoe. Yeah, it's so funny. Oh, for the people that... Okay, this is exactly why you need to be on YouTube watching this right now, but I'm going to show this one to the camera. Look at that filth. That is absolutely horrendous. I don't know what they were thinking when they built that, but you know when sometimes these like high-end designers, they just try and make the most cutting-edge shit and just see if it ever...
Yeah. That's fucking not it.
You did not... Fail. Absolute fail. No, they... Yeah, they fucked up there. Look, I still think there is room in the market for Nike to step in and just...
What are they doing?
Yeah, why like they just...
bring it out?
Just in their barefoot... just in their training section, just bring out a barefoot shoe. You don't
bring
need
out a good, but not the one with the fucking toes individually. You don't need that.
Just a nice barefoot shoe. Yeah, just a nice, slick...
wide toe box.
Yeah, barefoot shoe. That just looks cool and like... You know, it's subtle and just please.
You know, interestingly, so one reason I've heard of why they didn't do that was they got spooked from that class action lawsuit that came out against the toe one. So there was that toe, the shoes where you could see everyone's toes, right?
Yeah, but that's because they were making outrageous claims.
Yeah, so they were making claims that people, get less injuries. And then the class action lawsuit was because people got more injuries. Obviously, if you get these type of barefoot shoes, your chance of injury goes up because you've like chain shoes, right? And you go running in it and like it's a disaster. But apparently, like, you know, they don't want the bad publicity of bringing out a shoe like this. Hates people getting them going and getting an injury.
Mm.
Nearly everybody I've put on barefoot shoes has got some sort of small injury in the short term.
Yeah.
Like, just from as so small different. As, like, oh, my heel hurts to, like, no, my foot is, like, broken now.
Yeah.
Like, on it's that hard. Whole spectrum. But yeah, everybody hard. Gets some pain. So, potentially, a big company like Nike doesn't want to, like, put their name on a shoe. People go, trust Nike, you know, go out for their first 10K run and then like crippled in hospital.
Well, I think maybe if they just kept it in the training category of their shoes, not the running category of their shoes.
That's where it needs to be.
Yeah, people would use it in the gym. That's a great place to use it. You know what I mean? But they have the Mekon, it's just the Mekon Bear and just make it just a flat, completely thin soled shoe. But I think what's most important for shoes, obviously the flat sole is important. But for me, I think one of the things that I'm always looking for is the toe, just the ability to spread your toes. Like
wide toe box, yeah.
Even this pair of shoes here, like I don't need a wide toe. It doesn't need to be shaped like a wide toe box because the top is so soft that my toes can just spread out as they need to. And that, I think that if your toe is like pushed into a Converse,
that's where so much of the
so much damage there.
Yeah, so much of the dysfunction comes from. Yeah, is like losing your pinky toe, and then the biggest one is getting that big toe squished inwards.
Yes.
So that big toe should be straight.
Yeah.
So obviously you can, as you step, you go over that big toe. If it gets pushed inward, you just like roll onto the side of your big toe as you step.
It's too late. It's too late for my right foot. I kicked too many soccer balls.
Yeah, you've just lost a ton of function.
Yeah. I'd like to see soccer players' toes because they're squishing the boots, but they also kick like so often on the inside of their foot that their big toe would be like
push. And anyone knows that the tighter the shoe, the more accurate it is for kicking.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah. You never kick with a loose shoe. Oh, you always do the boots up as tight as possible. You know, I did my boots up so tight once that, and it was in like a, you know, do you ever do the style with your shoelaces where you'd wrap under the boot?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I love that style. And I played 2 games, and the second game was so, my foot was cramping so bad, but it was in a muddy game, and I had like the metal studs in.
Yeah.
That we couldn't figure out where, like, it was like a knot. And we couldn't figure out where the shoelace started and where it ended. So, we had to cut my boot off, basically. Because my foot was cramping that bad.
So, you know, you're fucked.
Terrible. But, yeah, tight. That's because it's real tight.
Okay, that is it for listener questions.
Good questions.
But we have a really good Netflix documentary we'll get to in a second. Before that, we're going to talk about some tools that actually work that live in our gym now.
Oh, man. This has been one of the most popular and I would say
Ford over toy
favorable additions to Creature Fitness in our history. This high-priced massage gun, what do they call it? They're going to kill us if we don't get
Hypervolt.
The Hypervolt,
and they have the Hypervolt Plus. We have the Hypervolt Plus at the gym.
We do have both the Hypervolt well. Plus, both incredible tools. We've got the Hypersphere, we've got the Venom Back, we've got a few different tools. Look, I would recommend the Venom Back is, I think, one of the most popular ones. So yeah, basically,
it's probably one that you'd probably get for your gym, probably not at home.
Yeah.
Because the Venom, it's like massage and warms up your back before training, which I know it honestly sounds like a gimmick and you're probably laughing because we just made fun of so many gimmicks, but it is so good.
Yeah. No, because, I mean, there's no contention over heat.
Yes.
Heat
works so well.
Heat is good for blood flow. Like, there's no contention there. This thing is basically this giant weight belt strap. And I just see clients with bad backs. They just basically put it on, strap it on, heats up their back, a little bit of massage in there, 20 minutes. And then, you know, if they're early to class, take it off. Next person uses it. They just walk around and they just get some loose. Their backs are so stiff from sitting at a desk all day or from being in bed all night. And it's just such a great tool. I want to get the heat sleeve for the knee.
Do they have one?
Yeah.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, so I like get it warms your knees up and stuff. But really, honestly, the most popular thing and what's really amazing is the Hypervolt. That massage gun and how it connects to the app and how you can run different programs through the massage tools and it kind of demonstrates it to you is one of the best additions that you could have. I reckon, honestly, your gym's great, but honestly, for your home.
Personal use. Gun is for personal use, I think, is where it's at.
Yeah, especially, you know, if you've got like a nice home and you... Because here's the thing about massage tools and stuff is they have to exist in your home environment. And some people just don't like the look of having foam rollers and lacrosse balls scattered all over their home. This Hypervolt thing looks like a Dyson, you know?
And keeping it out is what gets me to use it.
Yes.
So I just like leave it in the middle of the living room. And that way you just walk over, you just grab it, you just start going. Yes. And you get in a ton more massage you ever would.
Yeah, put on coffee table, entertainment unit, bookshelf, just beautiful, looks slick. And then you just turn that thing on. It's quiet. So as you're watching Netflix at night, you can just... apply it to whatever area is tight and sore. So anyway, if you guys want to check out all the products that we just mentioned, hyperice.com, that's Hyper Ice. So HyperIce.com, hyperice.com. And the code is MMP. That's going to get you 15% off all the products, which for their products is quite a significant saving. So definitely check that out. Hyperice.com, use the code MMP when you check out.
Okay, we have a Netflix documentary this week. Some good stuff coming through, and this is The Theory of Everything.
Okay, it's not a documentary. It's a
what do we call this? You had this before the show.
Yeah, docudrama, but I don't think it is a docudrama. I think it's just a feature film.
Okay, it's a movie basically, fucking movie on the biopic on renowned theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking.
Mm.
He won 5 Academy Awards.
Yeah, yeah, it was a sick movie. Yeah, like I didn't know much about Stephen Hawking, admittedly, going into this movie, except that obviously he was like in a wheelchair and he spoke with like the
machine,
the text editor on Paint Pro on Windows XP, and he was brilliant. Like he came up with so many theories and stuff and algorithms and shit that changed the world, and he defied how long they gave him because was it MS? Is that what it's called? No, neuro.
No, it's not MS. I'll get it, yeah.
Motor neuron disease, MNS. Yes. Yeah, MS. No,
MND. I thought he had something else.
I don't know. Anyway, motor neuron disease, what he's got. Basically, it's when the signals that go from your brain to your muscles...
He had ALS.
ALS, yeah. Yeah, and so you lose like all function in your muscles and your breathing and stuff. And they gave him 2 years to live, and he lived like...
Another 55 years.
Fuck, like that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But your brain is completely preserved, so you don't lose any sharpness of your mind. And so, obviously, he had to keep adapting. And I think more than... Obviously, his scientific work is incredible, and it's like his legacy. But I think it's more than anything, is that movie was like a testament to the human spirit. Mm. Of like everything in his life was getting worse and worse and worse. And yeah, he kept making the best of a bad situation.
Yeah, it's totally not. You couldn't really imagine anything worse than losing every single function. Muscle in your body and function. It's pretty rapid, but then it kind of gets slowly worse over the years after, it seems like. And what's amazing, he stuck with it. I mean, you could imagine him just not wanting to do anything else with his life.
Yeah.
Just sitting in a chair after that, but he like was obviously productive and you know, he could only write, 5 words a minute? Something like that.
I think he got faster.
He got faster, but he's still writing books.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's crazy.
It's fucking heaps of words. Yeah, and researching crazy. And everything, he can't move.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
just to fathom how he did that for 55 years is absolutely crazy. Like, he's one of the most impressive human beings, I think, ever to exist.
And if you watch the movie, probably one of the most impressive wives you could get as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, so I was reading some of the stuff after the movie.
Yeah.
And apparently... The Jane Hawking, who is his wife in the film, apparently she was saying they misrepresented how difficult it was for me to raise him up. And I can only imagine it was exceptionally difficult. They did portray that in the film, but I can imagine she must feel like...
Yeah. And it's never going to do it justice.
Exactly, exactly. She's like, unless you bring out like a 7-part series on just my suffering,
yeah, well, I'm she was not raising kids at the time as well. Three kids. And then looks like far more work than a kid.
Well, what's crazy is he had ALS and it was like pretty bad and he was still able to have kids.
Yeah. No, I know. That bit of the movie was not 100% explained.
Yeah. No, it did. They explained it.
What?
Yeah, he was brooding when he was
I guess ALS. So, yeah, but just...
No, he said, like, yeah, my penis still functions perfectly normal.
Yeah, they just couldn't move. I was like, I'm still surprised you're having children.
Yeah, like, obviously, he's not doing any of the work. I guess like, not, he's just lying on his back, but it still works. Yeah. So, I guess it's interesting because, like, certain muscles work, certain don't. Like, it's a very interesting disease, but... No, I think it's a great film. Definitely a tearjerker.
Yes.
Pre-warning. So, I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. It's like, fuck, it's entertaining.
Mm, great movie. I honestly was resistant to it. I didn't want to watch a movie about it. I was like, this is kind of lame, but there was not a lot of other choices on there, but I'm glad I watched it.
No, it's good. It's kind of like inspiring in a sad way.
Yeah.
And I think it is pretty unbelievable how famous he is. Like, he's a physicist, right? So, it's not a very cool thing. It's not like he's a basketball player.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody knows who he is.
Yeah, yeah. But great acting.
Yeah.
Like, because I tried to go into that position that guy was acting, right, as Stephen Hawking. Yeah. And like, dude, that hurt my neck.
Yeah.
Hurt my neck.
He really looks like he has no function.
Yeah, like body. He did a great job, that actor. Fantastic job.
In every stage as he loses function.
Yes, yeah. Unbelievable. Such a great job. So, great movie, guys. Definitely check it out. The Theory of Everything on Netflix.
Do you ever think, like, you know, we always see how your brain functions better when you exercise and stuff? Did you ever think, like, I wonder if he would have been even smarter if he could exercise? Because he couldn't do any physical activity, right?
I see.
And, you know, there's like all these benefits that show, like, hey, if you do like no activity and some activity, you're like smarter at the end of it. He had like no activity for 50 years.
Nah, I just feel like of all the rules that we have, he's just the exception to all of them.
That's true.
Yeah, they gave him 2 years, he lived 55. Yeah. Like, it's pretty crazy.
He's a beast.
He lived like 25 times longer than they expected. Okay, so last thing we'll leave you guys with is Project Fitness is now live. You guys can join in on Project Fitness. You can join any project program, become a subscriber. If you go to the mymuscleproject.com/fitness. You can check out the Project Fitness, or if you want the body program /body or the strong program /strong, check them all out. They are now all available on the subscription. Or if you want to buy just 8 weeks of the program and use the app, you can do that as well. There's an option to do that. But guys, thank you for everyone who's a subscriber and everyone who's doing the programs at the moment, and for the feedback. It's been awesome to see so many people do it, so many people purchase, and we're so thankful that so many of you using it, getting benefits. So, it's a life's work, this programming that's going into it. So, we definitely appreciate it a lot, even though we could mention it more often. So, thank you to everyone who is a subscriber. And thank you to anyone in the future who's going to do a 7-day trial or at least give it a crack, give it a go. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode after show. Thank you for those watching on YouTube. And we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.